This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, March 25th. I'm Julia Caulfield.
And I'm Gavin McGough.
In today's headlines, Mountain Village discusses voting eligibility.
Heartbreak inspires a regional poetry project.
Capital Conversations talks the budget.
And a mountain weather forecast.
Mountain Village may be changing who is eligible to vote. Last week, Town Council discussed an ordinance to put 5 amendments before voters for changes to Mountain Village's Home Rule Charter. Here's David McConaughey, town attorney for Mountain Village.
It's important to note that the passage of this ordinance does not change the charter. It's simply proposing 5 possible changes for consideration by the voters, and then it'll be up to the voters of the town as to whether those changes occur or not.
Several of the amendments are relatively straightforward. One would clarify when ordinances go into effect and make sure referendums go into effect in line with ordinances. Another would no longer require Mountain Village to publish ordinances in the newspaper, but allow for them to be published on the website. One would clean up language around the length of terms for design review board members to be determined by town council. 2 drew more conversation. One would look to move Mountain Village's general election from June to July. Currently, ballots are mailed out at the end of May.
The idea here is if we moved it to July, then it wouldn't be going out during off season or arriving just as people are, driving here for bluegrass. And, the idea is that that might increase voter participation.
The amendment with most contention would change who is eligible to vote. Currently, full-time residents are allowed to vote, as are non-resident property owners. McConaughey again.
So the way that works now is if you own a property, you can register with the town clerk and vote in municipal elections. And you have to own at least 50% of the property. So if it's, for example, a husband and wife who own it jointly, each of them could vote.
The potential change would allow LLCs or trusts to vote as well. McConaughey says more and more, property owners aren't owning a home as an individual. Rather, they're putting properties into a legal company.
The idea here is to basically restore voting rights to non-resident property owners who may have transferred their property into an LLC to take advantage of these very common approaches and give them the same rights as anybody else who are non-resident property owners.
During public comment, while a relatively small number, most speakers were opposed to moving the election to July, and all were opposed to changing voting status. Several commenters, including Joan May, say if the town wants to move the date of the election, it should be moved to November.
But to move it to July is such a slap in the face to locals. Like, oh, we care so much about visitors and second homeowners that we will change our elections to make it better for them, not realizing that that's when locals are so busy. It's just completely disrespectful to the local population.
But council member Scott Pearson says his goal is to encourage voter participation.
What I experienced when I was running was, that there were people who were second homeowners and their address of record was somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It was in Michigan. And then the ballot would be sent to them, but they weren't in Michigan. They were here or they were somewhere else. I personally am concerned for second homeowners that if that were to happen in November, if they're not at the address of residence and they're not here, then they wouldn't vote.
Leslie Browning spoke out against changing who's eligible to vote.
Mountain Village is in America. America is a democracy. It's not a plutocratic corporatocracy. We should not give up our individual human power of our vote to corporations ever. It shouldn't even be on the table.
Councilmember Jack Gilbride wants individuals to think of the value second homeowners bring to the community.
They pay the taxes. They get their water bill every month. Typically, they don't burden the school or Mountain Munchkins with children that utilize those things. They don't stress the police department. And they spend a lot of money when they're here. So I'm in favor of them getting a vote, as they have the ability to vote now. You know, it's the tax laws that are driving the difference, but it's still people. It's not IBM trying to vote here. So from that point of view, I think we have to recognize that they have almost a disproportionate financial contribution to the community, and that needs to be recognized.
Mountain Village Mayor Marty Prochazka says she understands the value of second homeowners, noting the decision to allow them to vote came about 30 years ago. She has concerns about moving the election to July and allowing LLCs and trusts to vote.
When we hear comments made up here like, you know, second homeowners have, you know, an inordinate amount of, you know, financial obligation in this town, so they should be, you know, treated accordingly, that's very difficult to hear as someone who works here and lives here and raises a family here. And I may not ever be able to retire, but I feel like my contributions to this community as an elected official, as a mom, as a business owner, are just as valuable as someone who lives on Benchmark Drive and visits their home twice a year to go on vacation.
Mountain Village Town Council voted 5-2 to move forward with a special election to ask voters to decide on the 5 proposed amendments to the Home Rule Charter. Council members Scott Pearson, Pete Dupre, Jack Gilbride, Harvey Mogensen, and Rick Gomez voted in support. Mayor Marty Prochazka and council member Tucker Magid voted against. If the ordinance passes on second reading, there will be a July 9 special election to decide on the amendments.
Imagine working through heartbreak, up late at night, wondering about that person no longer by your side.
I lie motionless in my bed, save for the swipe of my finger, hoping to catch a glance of a stranger turned to a friend turned lover, a lover turned back to a stranger, silently waiting for sleep to take me away. Yeah, that was a fun one. Well, maybe not fun, but definitely that one felt good for sure.
That's Motionless, a poem by Telluridian Matt Zaremba, which is included in Volume 3 of Poems for Ex-Lovers, an anthology of anonymous works collected from a community of broken-hearted writers flung across mountain towns in the West. The editor, compiler, and designer of this latest volume is Emma Renly, who is based in the Pacific Northwest and here in the Four Corners region. Renly and Zaremba sat down with Kodo News to chat about this latest volume of Poems for Ex-Lovers and the peripatetic community of writers who brought it about.
So Volume 1 took place almost entirely in Moab, Utah. And then the second book took place in Telluride, Colorado, right here. And this is where Matt also kind of came onto the project.
And Matt, so was this your first foray into poetry writing?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about it on the way over, just writing these poems where, like, you have heartbreak or you have some sort of these pent-up feelings. It was, for me, it was almost like a purge or a cathartic letting go of everything that had maybe been pent up and built up, and then just kind of moving forward. It was actually a really good release. It was nice.
Are you writing right now? Have you continued to write poetry?
No, I'm actually very happy right now. I have a loving girlfriend of almost a year and a half, and I've tried to write happy poems, but it's almost like I don't want to lose or purge those feelings that I had when I was writing sad poems. So I kind of want to stay in the moment. I still want to stay in the happiness and not lose that feeling.
So this, in this third book, the kind of collection, the community of writers is wider spread than in the first two editions. What ties all of these kind of soul-searching people together?
I think the common thread, other than myself, I'd like to think, is that we all come from these very small mountain outdoorsy towns, whether it be Telluride, whether it be Moab, Jackson Hole, Hood River, Bozeman, even San Diego. And I think that leads to a lot of different experiences in terms of love and loss.
Yeah, interesting.
We do live in these very extreme towns, and perhaps that also pulls out extreme emotions too. You know, the pendulum swings quite strongly in one direction or the other. And I think, like Matt was saying, you're going to see your ex or person that you used to be intimate with in town like these. And so I think the emotions are much more up close and you can't ignore them.
Talk about the decision to keep these poems relatively anonymous.
And you're reading the book, it's kind of great. You kind of attach, I guess, yourself to the poem. Like, you think of your own kind of interactions with other people and make, oh, this poem really resonates with me, even if I don't know who wrote it. Because, like, you start thinking about other people, interactions that you've had in the past. And at least that's how it kind of feels for me. So,
all right. So for all these heartbroken writers, what's next for them? Is there more heartbreak? Is there a volume four?
I absolutely want to do another book of, you know, collective work of anonymous poetry. No more ex lovers. This is the third book we've done. Please, like, we're over it. and you mentioned, you know, soul searching and outdoor towns, and I'd love to, like, perhaps look more into that theme of, like, the concept of, like, why do we travel? What is home? Is it a place? Is it a person? Is it a community? And so that's still being kind of divvied out in my brain and hopefully going to brainstorm with some other folks, but that's the next step for me.
That was Emma Renly and Matt Zaremba discussing the anthology Poems for Ex-Lovers, Volume 3. You can order a copy of this latest work and prior editions at sockeyepublishing.com. Or you can check one out at the Moab, Utah Library.
It's budget season in Denver. In this installment of Capital Conversation, KOTO State House reporter Lucas Brady Woods brings the latest. Hey, Lucas, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today.
Thanks for having me, as always.
The state legislature is working on the budget, and it kind of hit a major milestone last week. Can you talk about where the budget stands now and kind of what process does it still need to go before being signed into law by the governor?
There's a joint committee, legislative committee of lawmakers that's has some senators and some representatives on it. It's called the Joint Budget Committee. And it's basically in charge of putting together the state budget every year. And that's considering various recommendations from other parts of the government, including the governor, who makes a bunch of direct recommendations through a budget proposal that he puts out every November. And then the Joint Budget Committee looks at that, looks at the economic forecast, et cetera, and balances the budget with whatever investments may need to be made. What happened last week is the JBC, the Joint Budget Committee, approved their final budget for the next fiscal year. Now, what happens next is that budget that they approved goes to the House, where lawmakers will vote on it. And then after it's hopefully approved by the House, it'll go to the Senate, and then it'll go to Governor Jared Polis. And they call this budget the long bill because it's a very long bill. But there were some hiccups last week, actually, that we can get into.
Oh, yes. Tell me more about the hiccups.
So earlier this month, they came out with an economic forecast that was actually worse than expected. And now lawmakers and the governor have expected sort of a tighter budget year for a while because of a few things, but mainly federal stimulus funding that came in, you know, because of COVID is expiring this summer. Top of that, you know, economic growth is slowing. So last week that came in and the JBC was left with $170 million budget shortfall. So they had to work like late into the night last week. They didn't finish until like 2 a.m. on Friday morning to sort of balance the budget because of that. And the way they did that was sort of pull from existing state funds, mostly for education, and then also having to cut some things, including some of the governor's requests around workforce housing for the Department of Corrections and some other social service expansions and public safety measures.
On that note, kind of looking big picture, what are some of the highlights of programs or things that will be in the budget for the year to come?
That is would be some important information. So the budget is really focused on investments in education, whether it's K-12 education investments or measures funding for colleges to limit tuition increases. So that's a big part of it. They're also looking at pay increases for state workers and increasing Medicaid reimbursement rates for healthcare providers while there's sort of ongoing staffing shortages there. And it also sets aside over $3.5 billion in Tabor refunds. So that's going to be a huge chunk as well.
Well, Lucas, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of an overview of where the budget stands as it is, and we'll keep learning more as it moves through the general houses before getting to Governor Polis's desk.
No problem.
That was KOTO's Lucas Brady Woods reporting from Denver.
Composting is a great way to reduce waste going into the landfill. Currently, composting in the region is difficult, but Bruin Waste Management is working to make it more accessible. The waste management company is now offering commercial composting to businesses in multifamily complexes in Telluride and Mountain Village. Last year, Bruin Waste received a grant to purchase 2 compost collection trucks and containers. Compostable material is transported to a commercial composting facility. Mountain Village is hosting a Lunch and Learn program to help businesses and homeowners associations from across the region learn more about the program. Participants will learn about composting, Bruin's new service, as well as Mountain Village's composting incentive program. The Lunch and Learn will take place on Tuesday, March 26th from noon to 1 p.m. at Mountain Village Town Hall.
Efforts in Congress to protect the Lower Dolores River Canyon in the west end of San Miguel and Montrose counties as a national conservation area have been struggling over the past couple years. Despite support from both Democratic Senators Michael Bennet and John Hickenlooper and Republican Representative Lauren Boebert, the increased protections to the canyon have not gained traction in Congress. Conservation groups have turned to a new strategy. They're asking President Joe Biden to bypass Congress and protect the river as a national monument. Last week, the Montrose Board of County Commissioners came out in opposition of those efforts, claiming the protections that come with a national monument would harm mining, ranching, and other economic interests in the county's west end. Despite homegrown support for the NCA proposal, commissioners say the national monument designation is a different matter. Commissioner Roger Rash feels it's an example of outside interests, quote, trying to jam something down our throats, unquote. He says it's unfair to local residents.
Governor Jared Polis recently appointed a Southern Ute tribal member to the Colorado Board of Veteran Affairs. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Clark Adamitis of KSJD and KSUT reports.
Howard Richards Sr. served in the U.S. Army in the Vietnam War from 1968 to 1971. He went on to co-found the Southern Ute Veterans Association in 1986, which continues to bring veterans together in Ignacio today. He has also served as the chairman of the Southern Ute Indian Tribe. Richard says his appointment comes with mixed feelings.
I'm delighted that I feel that I can be and will be the voice of our Native people here in the state of Colorado. Probably taking about 40 years to get from there to here.
According to the U.S. Department of Defense, Native Americans and Alaska Natives have served in the military at the highest per capita rate than any other ethnic group. Rural Native Americans have high rates of post-traumatic stress disorder and have difficulties accessing health care and benefits. Richards says he's looking forward to educating the state board about tribal veterans' needs.
They need to understand that we're a little different because of our tradition and our beliefs, being able to share with the board who I am and what I am and how I speak to the board. There has to be different practices made in the healing process of our Native population veterans.
The Southern Ute Veterans Association will host Vietnam Veterans Day at the Veterans Memorial Park in Ignacio next Friday, March 29th. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for cloudy skies tonight with a slight chance of snow and a low around 15 degrees. Tuesday, snow is possible again, mainly in the afternoon, with new accumulations around 1 inch. The high is near 30 degrees. Tuesday night, expect clouds and a low in the mid-teens. The sun should come out on Wednesday when the high is near freezing. Wednesday night calls for partly cloudy skies and a low near 20 degrees. This has been the news for Monday, March 25th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206.